Hannah is at the age now where she really enjoys playing and getting out some of that three-year-old energy. If you've ever had kids of this age, you know how much crazy amount of energy they have. And one of the things that we enjoy doing whenever we get the chance is going down to the mall in Parkersburg and letting her kind of run around. She loves the train. I don't know if you've ever ridden the train down there, but there's a train that goes around the mall, and she loves the train. And one of the things with the train that we usually end up doing, because there's a line for the train or you're waiting for the train, is that you sit in the play place there. How many of you guys have ever been to the mall in, I guess it's Vienna, really, Grand Central Mall, and there's a play place with all sorts of little stuff for kids to climb all over, and it's padded. It's a great place to sit and watch your kid play a while. And one of the things that I like to do, as you know this, is I observe. I'm not going to say I watch people. I observe other people. And so one of the things, as we're sometimes there watching Hannah, is always interesting to watch the interactions with kids. You ever watch kids that age, 3 years old, 5 years old, 6 years, seven? And they're playing together, and the parents are like on edge, right? They're like ready to jump in because they know at some point their kid's going to do something, or they're worried that at some point their kid's going to do something and they're going to have to intervene to help their child get along or play with better this person that they've just met. And so we feel this tense feeling at times as parents to try to make sure that our kids know how to act. And we'll say something like, well, you know, you should be nice and share, and they were just trying to play with you and all these kinds of things. And it's fascinating to me how much energy and time and effort that we put into trying to teach our children how to treat each other. And then when we get to adults, to be adults, some of us just seem to forget all about that. And we fail to do some of the same things that we tried so many years to teach our children how to do, right? Did you know in the New Testament alone, this phrase, one another, occurs nearly 100 times? And usually, in the verses that it occurs in, it's talking about some sort of behavior that Paul or one of the writers is trying to get us to understand how we should treat one another. And so it'll use that phrase in different ways to tell us how to behave as we're in relationship with each other. So for the next several weeks, we're not going to go through all 100 verses. Don't worry. You won't have a series on 100 verses. But we're going to grab a couple of these verses and talk about how we behave as people. How should we treat each other as individuals in the family of God? What is the ideal situation for us as brothers and sisters to live together? And how does God want us to do that? This morning, we're going to read again. We're going to look at a passage that Elijah was reading this morning from John 13, and appreciate him doing that so much. John 13 is a really interesting chapter. It's a kind of a shift of gears in John's gospel, and we've talked about this a few weeks ago. John is now shifting focus to the Last Supper of Jesus. And he'll spend the rest of his gospel talking about the last few hours of Jesus' life, that Jesus and his disciples get together, they rent this room out, they're going to have their last meal together as friends together. And they're in this room together eating the Last Supper, the Passover meal really is what they're eating. We call it the Last Supper now as Christians. And after dinner, something unique happens. Jesus starts to teach, and he's trying to help them understand a few things that he wants them to know as he gets ready to leave, although they're not aware that he's going to leave them just yet. But at the end of the meal, in the passage that was read, Jesus says something interesting, and I want to read it again for you, because I don't know, like you, sometimes I read things and I don't pay attention to them really closely. And I want you to listen to this verse again, more closely. This is verse 34 of John 13. Jesus says, "A new commandment I give to you, that you love one another. Just as I have loved you, so you also are to love one another. By this, all people will know that you are my disciples, if you have love for one another." I find it interesting and weird that Jesus would refer to this as a new commandment. Do you? I don't know if the way that he introduced it as being a new commandment I give to you seemed odd to you, but it seems odd because isn't this something that kind of the whole Bible teaches, right? To love each other, is it an old commandment or is it a new commandment? I mean, even Jesus himself talks about this in Matthew 22. A guy comes up to him and says, "Hey, teacher, what is the greatest commandment?" Jesus says, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and love your neighbor as yourself. On these hang all the law and the prophets." So even Jesus seems to think that the commandment to love God, to love your neighbor as yourself, is the summation of the whole Bible, of all of the law and the prophets. Elsewhere in Scripture, you read through passages in the Old Testament, the New Testament, there was this underlying tone that this kind of is the assumption, that this is how we should treat each other. And so in Scripture, it doesn't seem like this is a new commandment, does it? And yet Jesus talks about it like it's a new commandment. What does he mean by that? It's not new in our experience either. I mean, even if you want to go to a secular kind of a mindset, people that aren't even Christians try to teach this to their children or teach this to each other, right? The basis of loving each other, respecting each other, following the golden rule. We have all sorts of names for it, right? But whatever you want to call it, all of us, at some point or another, as human beings, seem to think that this is an ethic that we should live by, to love each other and try to instill in our children. So what's new about this? What does Jesus mean by new? Well, first of all, we might start by thinking about the word that he uses for new is not the same kind of language that we often use for new. When we read this, at least I do, I think about something that's never been heard of before. It's something completely different from anything experienced before. And that's not the real word that Jesus uses for new. There's a beauty in Jesus' language that he was speaking that gave different words for different ideas and different kind of meanings behind it. And the meaning behind this particular word for new that Jesus uses here is something that is a different kind of something else. It's not completely original. And John will explain this later in 1 John chapter 2. If you want to turn there, 1 John chapter 2, this is the same writer writing in probably the same time frame. John writes his gospel many years later, towards the end of his life, and he also at the same time, basically, writes a few letters to some individuals who are Christians. And he picks up some of the same language that Jesus, he recalls, speaking at the Last Supper in John 13, in 1 John chapter 2. Starting in verse 7, he says, "Beloved, I am writing you no new commandment, but an old one that you had from the beginning. The old commandment is the word that you have heard. At the same time, it is a new commandment that I am writing to you, which is true in him and in you, because the darkness is passing away and the true light is already shining. Whoever says he is in the light and hates his brother is still in darkness. Whoever loves his brother abides in the light, and in him there is no cause for stumbling. But whoever hates his brother is in the darkness and walks in the darkness and does not know where he is going, because the darkness has blinded his eyes." So this makes a little more sense. John here acknowledges some of the same language that Jesus uses, but he further explains it. He says, "I am writing you no new commandment, but an old one that you've had from the beginning." Okay, this makes a little more sense, John, that you're talking about something that's not necessarily brand new, as in never heard before, but it's a new kind of commandment, that you love one another. So what is new about it then? If it's something that's new about it, what is it? He says, whoever is in the light and hates his brother is still in darkness. Whoever loves his brother abides in the light, and in him there is no cause for stumbling. But whoever hates his brother is in the darkness and walks in the darkness and does not know where he is going, because the darkness has blinded his eyes. The reality of love and loving each other is that sometimes what I say isn't exactly how I feel. That I can say things with my mouth and yet on the inside at times have the complete opposite attitude. I can tell you I love you, and yet when it comes down to it, there's still resentment, there's still bitterness, there's still prejudice, there's still anger, there's still attitudes inside of me that John says, no, if this is how you feel inside of you, you walk in darkness. It doesn't much matter what you say as much as how you feel and what's going on inside you that's the problem. And so John says, this is a new commandment that I'm giving you. That you don't just say it, but that you mean it from the depths of your heart in every way as you use these words together. And most of us would acknowledge the fact that we use the word love so freely, don't we? I mean, it is a word that has become in some ways meaningless to us. Because I say things like, well, I love ice cream. Well, I love pizza. Or, I don't know why I keep mentioning food, but I love cars. Whatever hobby might be that you have, you love these things. And what you're saying is you just have a strong like for them. And I would suggest that we have to be careful with that, because it's not too far a step that we take when we say things to our brother and sister like, I love you. And yet when we look at our actions and the way we have attitudes towards people and we actually live our lives, something completely different is being shown. I might say things like, oh, you know, it's okay. I still love you. But inside, it's not okay. I have real issues here that need to be dealt with, and I'm not dealing with them. We're dismissing issues that we should probably talk about if we truly loved each other. Sometimes we can claim to love and yet not really love. Jesus will explain this even further if you go back to John 13. So go back to John 13 for a moment. And Jesus will explain it as he gets along further in his words to his disciples in chapter 13, starting verse 34 at the second half of this verse. He says, a new commandment I have given to you, that you love one another just as I have loved you. So you also should love one another. Just as I have loved you. So ultimately, the love that Jesus is telling us that we should have for each other is the same love that he has for his disciples. Think about this for a minute, okay? How long at this point has Jesus spent with his disciples? 3 years, right? He spent every waking moment with them, getting up, going to bed, living, sleeping, eating, breathing, fighting together, right? They fought. It wasn't always a big happy family. They had issues. They dealt with it. But 3 years, they've lived together. And ultimately, in a few hours, Jesus knows what he's about to do. He's going to die for these guys. And he hints at this in chapter 15. The same conversation, by the way. Chapter 13 and 15 are Jesus' just extended conversation. The chapter breaks, but the talk doesn't. Chapter 15, verse 13. You might be familiar with this one. Greater love has no man than this, that he lay down his life for his friends. Just as I have loved you. Maybe the two hardest things to do in relationship with people and trying to love people as best you can are to make sure that what you say is the same thing that's going on inside your heart. And when called on, you go to the very ends of the earth for that individual and do everything that you can to demonstrate that you do love them. And you sacrifice for them. Jesus says, I want you to love your brother, your sister, just as I have loved you, with the sacrifice, with the same level of devotion and attitude towards that person as I have loved you. This is a high call, people. And I know we throw around these words a lot, and even as I was preparing for this lesson, I thought, man, how trite are some of these phrases that we use? How flippantly we talk about love like it's something that just happens naturally. And yet we understand that if we take Jesus seriously with what he's saying here, it's a really hard thing to do, because that means that I need to lay my life down for you if I really love you. It may never come to that. I may never be called on to do that. But if I truly love you as Jesus loved me, that means I'd die for you. And Paul even writes how rare it is, Romans chapter 5, that someone would die for a good man. And so it fights against everything that we naturally want to do as people. This isn't a lovey-dovey type butterflies in your stomach feeling. This is a true ground level, very real, tangible, hard working definition of love that Jesus calls us to. Just as I have loved you, you are to love one another. Because Jesus did both. He made sure that he never said anything that he didn't actually feel and believe inside of him. And when he said, I love you, he was willing to go to the cross, which is where it ended for him. But why would he ask us to do this? What's the purpose of this love that Christ calls us to? And why is it so important that we do it? He ends this passage in chapter 13, verse 35 this way. By this, all men will know that you are my disciples if you have love for one another. The world will not care what we say about God if we love no better than they do. The world will not care anything that you have to say about who Christ was and why you should believe in Him and what are the benefits of a Christian life if they turn around and look at how we treat each other and they see no difference in how they treat each other outside these walls. And I fear that the ultimate end of how we love as individuals is shown not in our words, but in our actions. And sometimes our actions don't necessarily line up with what we say. And so if the world sees us as we go out through Monday through Saturday and we treat each other just the same as anybody else would, and we disrespect and we gossip and we backbite and we have as much drama as anyone else and we have anger towards each other and we speak about each other the same way they do, why would they want anything to do with this? No gains for them. And so this morning I want to ask you a question. If unbelieving people looked at my relationships with other believers, would they be able to tell that I am a disciple of Christ? Without knowing anything else about me, if they just saw me operate in a group of brothers and sisters and how I treat and how I handle these situations that just naturally happen as we're in relationship with each other, would they have any reason to believe that I'm a follower of Christ? Do I handle my relationships with people in this room any differently, any better than I do with people I go to work with, I go to school with, I encounter on the road out driving, I deal with in my family? And if not, why not? Because if you call yourself a disciple, you will listen to Jesus' words when He says, you should love each other as I have loved you. So that nobody could look at this here, this relationship that we share together, and say, I don't want any part of that. Dwight L. Moody was an evangelical leader in the early 1900s, built an empire, really. Moody Publishers, Moody Bible Institute. He did a lot of traveling and speaking, different kinds of things. A lot of ministry in his life. And he tells the story of a young man, and I don't know if it was a young man who was going to their church in Chicago where Dwight Moody preached, or if it was some other church that he was made aware of, but it was a little boy in Chicago that was attending a Sunday school that he knew of. And apparently his parents ended up moving. This boy would go to Sunday school every week. His parents moved to another part of the city. This little boy would come on his own to church. And when his parents moved, they moved to a farther end of the city, so much so that it really was a far distance for this boy now to get to church. And yet he still came by himself. He still showed up every week for Sunday school. And at some point, somebody asked him why he went so far when he passed, you know, a number of other good churches on the way to get there. This was his response. They may be as good for others, but not for me. Why not? This person asked. Because they love a fellow over there. If only we could make the world believe that we love them as deeply as we loved each other and as deeply as Jesus loved us, maybe the world would be a better place. Maybe we wouldn't have near the problems that we do in our world of disrespect, of anger, of gossip, misinformation, slander. Maybe some little boy would say, they love a fellow over there at the Woodsfield Church of Christ. And they care so deeply about me that I'll never go anywhere else. A new commandment I give you, that you love each other just as I have loved you. Do you love like Jesus loved? Do you sacrifice the way Jesus sacrificed for each other? If not, why not? We're going to sing a song here in a moment, as we usually do at the end of our time sermon together, and we'll offer an invitation as we usually do. And I would just encourage you to think about these words. Do you love as Jesus loved? And if you need to respond in any way to the message, to ask for prayers, we'd be happy to pray for you. If today would be the day that you decide for sure to follow Christ, believing that He died for your sins, that He rose again on the third day in victory over sin and death for us as people to ransom us, rescue us from ourselves and from the pain of our sin, we'd be happy to do anything that you need this morning. And please come as we stand and as we sing this song.